And so last few weeks, we've been in a series called Housework. And today what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about love. And specifically, I want to address a lot of the dynamics that go on in marriage. And one of the key ingredients that help love last a lifetime, just like the song Stephen just sang about. But I'm very confident that as it's been for the other messages in this series of housework, that that the principles that we're going to talk about really apply to everyone in the room, regardless whether or not you're married or whether you are, whether you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whether you're involved in any type of romantic relationship, whatever that is. I'm very confident that the principles we're going to talk about are going to be helpful because they really apply across the board in any types of close relationships. But I'm going to, you know, focus my illustrations more so on marriage and kind of dance in and out of that particular context. And I tend to write a lot about marriage. I tend to teach a lot on marriage in different environments and different contexts. And so one of the things I'm always doing is looking for fresh ways to say similar ideas. And so I want to make sure that today I just mentioned a couple authors, Annie Stanley, Daniel Goleman, influenced a lot of some of the thinking that I'm going to dive into today. I'm very grateful for their insights and their thoughts. But here's this overarching tension that I want to kind of dive in this morning. I want to sift through and explore. And that is, why is it that a person can stand at an altar so in love with the person in front of them? This person that they would gladly vow to love and to honor till death do they part. And then 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later, they just don't care for them very much. You know, they don't even like them very much. They're just not interested in them at all. They're kind of apathetic to the point where sometimes it goes the opposite extreme, where there's just no one in the world that they despise more in their life than that person. You know, that they can't even stand to be in the same room with them. Even hear the name mentioned. Why is that? I mean, because when you think about that and you reflect on that, that's just a weird dynamic that can happen. Or why is it that your new boyfriend can accidentally bump into a vase in your apartment and it falls to the floor and shatters all over the place and you immediately run over to help clean it up and say, it's okay, it's no big deal, really. It's just a vase, don't worry about it. I mean, it's fine, really, no big deal. But that same person, 10 years later, now your husband, bumps into a vase and it shatters all over the floor and suddenly this flood of harsh emotion comes out. How could you be so careless? I mean, don't you realize how long I looked to find the perfect vase for that end table, and now it's ruined. Now I'll never find another vase like that. And you find yourself furious, and rather than rushing over to help this time, all you say is, well, don't just stand there, go clean it up. I mean, how does that happen? Same person, same circumstance, completely different reactions. Or why is it that you can go to the office and coworkers can say all sorts of sarcastic things and you can just laugh it off? Or your boss can give you negative feedback about your performance and yet somehow you manage to still speak kindly and respectful to your boss and to your coworkers. But when you come home to your wife, the one you vowed to love and honor and cherish, she tries to joke with you about something and suddenly you let yourself become extremely offended, put off. Or she offers you some feedback on a better way that you could perhaps fold the laundry or a better way you may have handled a situation with the kids, and immediately you get furious. This rage builds up in you and you just storm off. I mean, how does that happen? Because when you really think about it, that's a weird dynamic that plays itself out with people. And that's the gap that I want to explore today, because that gap is very real. And it happens all the time. And yet when you think about it, it's pretty odd that such a dramatic transition can take place in the way we feel and react toward one another. Now, at first, when two people start to show a romantic interest in one another, very often they're really careful with each other's heart. Now, there's some selfish motivation in that and what people are trying to get from the other person. But oftentimes we're so careful in the way we speak, the way we react. We tend much more often to assume the best about one another's hearts. And sure, you maybe run into a few bumps in the road along the way and the way you way you go, but you navigate those pretty well among the two of you, and you continue to be pretty careful with each other's hearts. But then people get married. And after a few months of marriage, your spouse says something harshly. It does something that rubs you the wrong way, and there's something in you that erupts. And maybe for you, that reaction plays out by you getting loud or by you lashing out with some sort of cutting sarcasm or maybe by you just shutting down and closing yourself off. And your spouse is like, whoa, 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 wait a second. Where did that come from? And you're like, well, if you didn't say what you said, then I wouldn't react that way. What do you expect from me when you do something like that? And this goes back and forth, and this toxic stuff keeps coming out of both of you, albeit it may manifest itself in different ways in the way that both of you react, but it can be toxic from both of you nonetheless. To the point where she eventually goes to one of her girlfriends, and she's like, man, I just didn't realize. Just didn't realize that he had such anger issues. And then eventually he finds himself going to, well, we're not really sure who guys go to, but he at least finds himself muttering to himself, saying, she just makes me so angry whenever she brings that up. And she says to him, well, you know what? I didn't see this side of you when we were dating. Why didn't I know this about you before? Why didn't I see this side of you when we were dating, before we got engaged, before we got married? And he's like, well, why is it that whenever I'm in an argument, I get into conflicts with all different kinds of people, but why is it that you're the only one who makes me act this way, who makes this kind of reactions happen? And here's what starts to take place. You see, he thinks the reason he blows up, he thinks the reason he acts the way that he does, he thinks the reason all this toxic stuff comes out of him is because of her. Because she keeps pushing his buttons, because she won't stop nagging, because she keeps giving him that one look, because she won't stop bringing that one thing up. He thinks, well, the reason I act this way, it's because of her. And she thinks, well, if only he would just stop, or if he would start doing this, or if he only would take some responsibility, if only he'd get home on time, if only he'd quit that one thing, then I wouldn't act the way I do. And she gets convinced that the reason the ugly stuff comes out of her, it's because of what he said or what he's done or what he hasn't said or done. But see, here's what I want us to get today. What I want you to understand, the reason ugly, toxic stuff comes out of you sometimes when your buttons get pushed isn't because of your spouse, isn't because of your boyfriend or girlfriend, it isn't because of whoever it is that's closest to you. The reason ugly stuff comes out of you sometimes when your buttons get pushed is because that's what's actually inside you. That's why it comes out. Because that's what's actually on the inside of you. Now, it's much easier to blame that stuff on other people and think, well, you know what? It's their fault. But the truth is, the reason that stuff comes out of you, the reason it can come out of me, it's because that's what's actually on the inside. Now all of us have broken, fractured things inside of us. All of us do. And what we discover over time is that no one brings it out of us like the people that we love and care about the most. And sometimes we don't even know that that junk is in there till we find ourselves in a long-term romantic relationship. Because while it's very true that being in a long-term romantic relationship, being in a marriage, absolutely, absolutely can bring out the best in us in a way that nothing else can, it's also very true that that kind of relationship, a marriage, can serve as a crucible that can also bring out the worst in us if we allow it to. Which is the reason why you can find yourself standing at an altar one minute professing your undying love and barely being able to even count five faults that the other person has on one hand, to a few years later being able to not even name five good things about that person, only being able to see faults and feeling things like disdain and apathy toward that very same person. So what I want to share with you today is, if we want to make our love relationships last for the long haul, if we want to make our marriages thrive, not just settling for coexisting together, but thrive in closeness and in oneness, there's one of the things we have to learn how to do is, we have to learn how to pay attention to what's actually going on inside of us. We have to pay attention to what's going on inside our own hearts. In the scriptures, it says that the King Solomon is the wisest man who ever lived. And so he writes several different parts that we find in the Old Testament scriptures, and especially in the book of Proverbs, all sorts of wisdom, just a plethora of wisdom that he pours out. Notice what he says, Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23. He says, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life." Another translator says that same verse this way, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are all the, are the issues of life." Everything, all the issues of life that come from the heart. Another one puts it this way, "Above all else," Solomon says, "guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life." Again, Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, who said all sorts of incredibly important wisdom, says, "Above everything I've told you, above all else, of all the things I've told you, this is the most important. Above all else, guard your heart." Jesus, all throughout the New Testament, reiterates the very same idea, that constantly talking about the overflow of our heart then is what comes out of our mouth and our reactions. He says it starts here. It starts with our heart. We have to guard that. We have to pay attention to what's going on. And so Solomon pleads with us. You got to pay attention to what's going on inside of you. You cannot ignore that. You cannot neglect that. Got to pay attention to what's going on inside your heart. And most of us would tend to agree that that's a wise thing to do. Unfortunately, though, if someone was to ask you, what's your plan? What's your strategy on making sure that you're paying attention to what's going on inside of you? Most of us never really thought through that. I mean, we make plans for all sorts of things, but rarely do people make plans to figure out, how am I going to stay attuned to what's actually going on inside of me? Like how Stanley puts it in one of his books. He says, "We're not good at monitoring our own hearts, but we're really good at monitoring our spouse's behavior." And that's true. And it's not just true for marriage, it's true for any relationship that's important to us, that we're not good at really paying attention to what's going on inside of us at a particular moment, but we're really good at paying attention to what we think our boyfriend or girlfriend should do, what the people who are living in our house with us should say or not say. We're really good at monitoring the people that are closest to us, really good at monitoring their behavior. And let me be clear, in a relationship, in a marriage, not just one, but both of these are important. You need to monitor your spouse's behavior. That's important. But the fact of the matter is you already, for the most part, know how to do that very naturally. Most of us do. Most of us do that very instinctively. You don't need any help figuring out how are you going to better monitor your spouse's behavior or the people in your home and the people that are closest to you that you care about. But what we don't do naturally, what we don't do instinctively, is pay attention to what's going on inside of us. So let's consider how this plays out for a moment. Let's say a husband decides that he wants to try and help out his wife. She normally does the dishes after dinner, but he decides he's going to take the initiative and he's going to do them for her. So he kind of goes to the pile of dishes, loads up the dishwasher, and then he goes and sits down on the couch and waits. A few minutes later, his wife, who's upstairs, she walks downstairs into the kitchen and she opens up the dishwasher. And at that moment, when she opens up the dishwasher, her husband is anticipating this huge smile to break out on her face. I mean, he's not expecting cartwheels necessarily, but he is at least hoping for a, "Wow, honey, thank you so much. That is so thoughtful of you." And he's subtly hoping that that somehow will translate to some appreciation later on in the evening, if he's honest with himself, after the kids go to bed. But that's not what happens when she opens the door. Instead, she opens the door of the dishwasher and she lets out this disappointed, and then very deliberately starts rearranging the dishes in the dishwasher in such a way that it will easily allow her to fit a third more dishes in the dishwasher than the rookie way her husband tried to do it. And so she closes the dishwasher, moves on to the next task without saying a word, pretty oblivious to all the other dynamics that are going on in that moment. But her husband's sitting there and he's watching this all play out and he is fuming. He's enraged. And he doesn't really know why. He just knows that he's mad. Because he's like, how in the world could she be so ungrateful? How in the world could she be so unappreciative, so insensitive? But here's what they both don't necessarily realize in that particular moment. You see, what he doesn't understand is that what really is going on inside of him is that he's doing the dishes mostly out of selfish motivations. I mean, it has this veneer of loving her, but what he's really trying to do is get a specific reaction from her that will make him feel good about himself, that will win him some points in the good husband category. But when she starts rearranging the dishes, what's really going on inside his heart is that he feels like she's communicating, oh, there's one more way you don't measure up. One more way you don't get it right. One more way. You're a disappointment. And it crushes him. And so you need to understand, both monitoring behavior, paying attention to monitoring, you know, someone's behavior, and understanding what's going on inside your heart are both important here. Where what she needs to hear, someone tell her, is, listen, I know your way of arranging the dishes is better, and I know no one probably says thank you to you for the 364 other days of the year that you load the dishwasher. That's a whole other issue. But you simply opening the dishwasher and leaving the dishes as they were and saying, thank you, honey, that simple reaction, you need to understand, that would do wonder for your husband's soul. And it would do wonder for your connection and your closeness to one another. And in the same way, what he needs to hear someone say to him is, listen, if you genuinely want to love and serve your wife, if that's what you want to communicate, then figure out how she actually arranges the dishes and do it her way. If you really want to love her. Because her way is likely better, you know? And she's done it a lot more than you, probably. And you need to humbly admit and just let that and learn to do it her way rather than demanding that she do cartwheels over your way so that you can feel better about yourself. See how that plays out? And when you don't understand what's going on inside of you at the moment, it becomes so easy to accuse and blame and think, how in the world could this person that I'm trying to love, how could they do this to me? Let's say a husband and a wife have a couple young kids, and she has the opportunity to go out of town with some girlfriends on a weekend trip, maybe, say, someplace like Savannah. And so the two of them talk about it. They figure it out in the budget, and they decide, you know what? This would be good. You know, she hasn't had much time away. I know you're tired. And so, hey, this would be a good gift to your soul. And so the plan's on. A couple months later, that Friday that she's supposed to leave finally comes. He comes home from a long day of work, and he's just exhausted, just as she's trying to rush out the door to catch up with her friends and so they can go away for the weekend. And yet, in the hustle and bustle of the transition, she ends up having to just kind of walk out of the door with just a quick goodbye from her exhausted husband. And she looks back, and she sees him trying to calm this crying baby and chase down their toddler who's running around with scissors, you know, kind of frantic. And so she finds herself ending up feeling miserable the entire weekend. Every time she calls to check in, he sounds tired. And when she asks, well, how are things going? And he's trying to be honest with her. And, yeah, you know, they're a little bumpy. Things are a little rough, but we're hanging in. And as he says that, she finds herself getting more and more mad at him, thinking, you know, how is he going to try and make me feel guilty for being away? Tired? He wants to sound tired? He doesn't know what tired is. Doesn't he know this is my life every day? He doesn't know what tired is. I mean, how's he going to pretend that 3 hours with the kids is going to exhaust you and all these kinds of stuff? This is my life. How dare he sound worn out? Then there's this other part of her that thinks, you know, he just hates that I went on this trip. This was a stupid idea. I don't need to go out again. I just don't want to deal with the guilt anymore. And all these emotions and all these insecurities start playing out inside of her. But what's important for her to hear is that someone needs to be able to say to her is, listen, you can't control other people so that they'll always have the perfect reaction to make you feel the way you want to feel. Sometimes your husband is just going to be tired. Sometimes he's just going to be stressed. You can't always control the circumstances and situations. It probably is a stressful situation for him, out of his norm, out of his normal rhythm of what he's doing. But sometimes situations are just what they are. And there are times you're just going to need to let him feel how he's going to feel and not try to manipulate or control his emotions or become paralyzed by what you think he may or may not feel in a particular situation. Because when you really start to pay attention to what's going on inside of you, what you may discover is that you're really trying to control his behavior so that you can feel a certain way. And that guilt that you're feeling, that sense of entitlement and what you deserve, you might discover has very little to do with him and more about the condition of your own heart and baggage that you brought with you into a relationship from past experience, past relationships, whether it's with another romantic relationship or with parents or all sorts of different things. Now, at the same time, what's important for him to hear, is, listen, the greatest gift that you can give your wife, if you want to bless her time away, if you really want this to be a gift to her, it's worth you taking 15 seconds of your time before she leaves. Put your arms around her and say, hey, I just want you to remember, we agreed to this. I know it looks kind of hectic and crazy around here. We agreed to this together. It's going to be great. I want this for you. Sure, I mean, we're all going to miss you like crazy. I'm going to miss you. But I want you to go and have an awesome time. And there's going to be times when we talk, I'm sure I'm going to sound tired, my envy is stressed out. But listen, we're going to be just fine, really. Everything's under control. I love you. Go. Have a great time. Some of you men, you have no idea what that would do for your wife's soul and your connection and your closeness moving forward. Now, you can easily flip all those different roles around in different types of relationships and play them out in all sorts of different dynamics and play out all sorts of different scenarios with different people in your life. But what's important to recognize is that we all want to feel certain things. We all want to feel a certain way. We all want to feel valued. All of us do. We all want to feel appreciated. We all want to feel lovable and competent and respected. And those closest to us, our spouses, our family, moms, dads, kids, what, our loved ones, they all have a role in helping us feel well that way. That's normal. That's just life. That's how relationships work. But when something happens that causes us to not feel the way we want to feel, our tendency is to put the entire blame on those closest to us, especially our spouses, that it's their fault. But you see, here's what we cannot miss. Your ability to feel certain things is determined not only by your loved one's behavior, though it has a role, not only by your loved one's behavior, but also very much by the condition of your own heart. And you see, that's the gap that we often miss. That's the gap we don't realize. Your ability to make your love relationship thrive for a lifetime has just as much to do with the condition of your own heart as it does with the behavior of your spouse. Now, again, this is much easier to recognize in other people than it is to recognize in ourselves. So often, we can easily spot this in other people. You may be watching another couple, you know, and see this play out, or you're just listening to feedback, and, you know, they're telling you a story about what's happening, or you see it happen in person, and, you know, she says this, does this, and it's kind of on this kind of level. You're like, yeah, that's not too good. That wasn't too smart, but it kind of falls on this scale. But he reacts like this. He reacts like it's way off the charts, and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Something's way out of balance there, because that doesn't deserve that kind of reaction. See it vice versa, and you can easily recognize it, and your thought is, wow, there's something else going on in there. There's some junk somebody's not aware of. There's something inside of them they're not dealing with. It's real easy to spot in someone else. But in the moment, when stuff comes out of us, when ugly stuff comes out of us, we're not very good at paying attention to seeing that junk in ourselves. So as we wrap this up, here's what I want to do. I want to just give you a couple simple things that I hope will be helpful to you in learning how to pay attention to what's going on inside your heart. And these are very simple, not original with me, but I've used them a lot over the years, and they've been very helpful to me, not only in my own life, but also as I counsel other people. It's stuff I talk about and try to help people discover. And so I'm hoping that they'll be helpful to you as well. First one is this. It's that you need to do the hard work of pausing long enough to figure out how to name what you're actually feeling before you speak or before you respond. You need to do the hard work to figure out how to name what it is that you're actually feeling before you speak, before you respond. Many times, all you hear people say is, well, you know what, I'm just frustrated, or I'm angry, or I'm upset. And those words kind of serve as this banner for every emotion, you know, in the dictionary. And all it is, well, I'm just angry, I'm just frustrated. This is especially true for guys. We got kind of a limited vocabulary. You know, girls tend to have a little bigger emotional vocabulary, but it's something when you really play it out. Both men and women do struggle with this. And so what I want to do is I want to try and help you expand your vocabulary a little bit so you can better identify what it is that you're actually feeling rather than simply always resorting to, well, I'm just frustrated. I'm just mad. So here's a few examples. I feel embarrassed. You know, man, I tend to blow up and get mad a lot. And I think it's because of them, but what they're doing, but you know what? I think when I tend to swell up really times and get all mad, it's because not because I'm mad, it's because I'm embarrassed. I feel disrespected. I feel ugly, unattractive. I feel unwanted. I feel like a failure. You know, your dad is so successful, and every time you talk about him, I just find myself getting angry, and it's because I feel like a failure compared to him. I feel left out. I feel stupid. You know, when you try to correct the way that I'm doing something and you say, listen, it'd just be much simpler, much easier if you just do it like this. I know I get frustrated. I know I react kind of harshly to that. It's why we shouldn't paint together. It's why we shouldn't do housework together. But it's just because I just feel stupid. I feel wounded. Betrayed. Now, when you share something embarrassing about me with one of your friends, and I overhear you say that on the phone or in a crowd of people, I feel betrayed. I feel jealous. I feel abandoned, old. I feel picked on. You know, whenever we get in these arguments, I think that's what it is. I just feel picked on a lot. I feel scared. For a long time, I just thought I was mad. Angry. But you know what? I think what it really is when it comes down to it, I'm really scared. I feel insecure. I feel useless. Whatever it is that you're feeling, you need to pause long enough to pay attention to what it actually is, to what's actually going on inside of you. You need to name it. And then when you do, the next thing you need to do is that you just need to simply say it out loud. Even at first, if you just say it out loud to yourself, but you need to name it and you need to say it out loud. You know, whenever he comes around rolling up in his nice car and his nice clothes, talking about how great everything is at the office, the truth is I feel like a failure. You need to find a way to say that out loud. Again, if it's only even to just yourself, you've got to say it out loud, because if you don't, that unspoken emotion, when you allow that to remain unearthed inside of you and not dealt with and acknowledged, it holds this power over you that begins to create wedges between you and the people that you love and care about the most. But when you name it, it starts to lose that power that secrecy has over you. Because what begins to happen when you name it and you say it out loud is that you're able to start to put together things like, you know what, perhaps the reason my wife talks so much about her brother is not because she's trying to shove his success in my face and make me feel bad. Perhaps she just loves her brother. Maybe this has been my issue all along. I mean, after all, why is it that his success makes me feel like such a failure? I gotta wrestle with that. But you see, in order to get there, you gotta name it. You gotta say it out loud. I feel embarrassed. I feel left out. I feel scared. And you got to know up front, you got to be aware that that is very hard to do. It is hard to say it out loud. It is hard to verbalize it, even to just yourself. And the reason we don't often want to say it out loud is because then we lose our excuse. Many times we just want to stay mad. We want to stay upset because we have this way of allowing our frustration and our pouting to try to control and manipulate our spouse's behavior. But if I say what it is that I'm actually feeling, suddenly I lose the power to be able to do that because I'm actually aware of what's really going on inside of me. So I just can't default to, well, I'll just let my anger kind of control your emotions. So you need to say it out loud. And then sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, probably more often than not, you need to say it to your loved one, to your spouse. Because perhaps all you've ever communicated to them is, I'm angry. Or maybe the only way you've ever communicated your frustration is by shutting down, by pouting on the couch, by giving them the cold shoulder, by just kind of withholding yourself from them. But instead of doing that, you'd say, you know, I've realized that, and I've been thinking a lot about this, and I know, yeah, I know you don't mean to, but I've realized that whenever you crack jokes on me in public with your friends around, just makes me feel abandoned. I feel kind of threatened that we're at stake somehow, that somehow you don't have my back, and that we're not together in this thing. And then this is something for all of us that's incredibly important for all of us to understand. When someone you love says, when you did this, this is how it made me feel. When you didn't do this, this is how it made me feel. When you said this, when you didn't say this, this is how it made me feel. When someone you care about says that to you, please hear this. That is not an accusation. That is not a shot at you. That is simply an observation. That is important information that you're receiving, not an accusation. And so when someone tells you that, when someone says, when you did this, when you said this, this is how it made me feel, the proper response is, I'm so glad that you told me that. I'm so grateful that you let me know that. And then you leave it at that. I'm so grateful that you told me. The proper response isn't, well, you know what? That's your problem. Or, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Or the classic, you know what? Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but loving, healthy, aware people, when they discover something that they do or something that they say stirs up pain and hurt in their spouse, loving, healthy, aware people make a deliberate effort to quit doing it. They don't say, well, you know what? You just have to deal with it. You should be more mature. You know what? You just need to grow up and get over it. No. Loving, healthy people make a deliberate effort to quit doing it. So, here's my hope for all of us. Is that we would be a community of people that really pay attention to what's going on inside of us. That we would recognize that when we hit bumps in a road in a relationship with people that are close to us, again, whether it's a parent, whether it's with a kid, whether it's with our spouse, a loved one, boyfriend, girlfriend, somebody we're living with, whoever that is, someone that's close to us, that we would say, you know what, it's not all their fault. Everything's their fault. When this ugly stuff comes out of me, it's all their fault. That we would recognize that ugly, toxic stuff comes out because that's what's actually inside. And we would do the hard work of paying attention to what's going on inside of us. And we'd figure out how to name what it is that we're actually feeling. And when we name it, we'd find a way to say it out loud. We find a way to speak it so that it can lose this power that it has over us and it can start to heal relationships where there's been wedges for so long. And things that maybe we've just thought, oh, well, I'm just angry, I'm just mad. Really, we'd come to discover that it's way more than that. And then when we can actually name it, it can free us to actually deal with it. And that, again, we would be the kind of community that would make it safe. Make it safe for people that we love, people that we care about, to actually say how it is that they're feeling and respond in such a way that would just communicate that we're with them and that we love them and that we're grateful that they would trust us with such personal stuff. So let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for the simplicity of the wisdom of, above all else, guard your heart. And I pray that we would take that really seriously. I pray that we would put as much weight on that as the scriptures do, as the wisest person who ever lived did, as Jesus did. And Father, I pray that for people in this room that what we've talked about today, that it will help turn on some light bulbs for them, some light bulbs of maybe certain dynamics that have been going on in their home the last 24 hours, the last week, the last few months, that'll help explain maybe a little bit of the dynamic that they grew up in their own home, why things were the way that they were, why people reacted the way that they did. That would help explain past relationships that fractured and blew up and left all sorts of scars. But that all of that would be used as a catalyst to help move us forward. Say, I don't want to live like that. And that we would trust you. We would trust that you're always leading us toward life. That you're always leading us to the best life possible. And so we would figure out what it takes to do the hard work of paying attention to what's going on inside of us. And we'd name it. And we'd figure out a way to say it out loud and free ourselves so that we can trust and follow you into life. Father, we love you. And we thank you. In the name of our resurrected Savior, Jesus. Amen.